I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined this time by Miss Trisha Innes. What's up, Trisha?
Hey, not much. How about you?
Nothing much. Now, Trisha, when I first approached you about being on the show, you said, oh, I love Chloe and I love Lois, so any episode featuring them, and I thought, oh, great, Truth. That's a great Chloe episode. It's going to be so much fun to talk about because Chloe is your favorite character. Chloe was one of my favorite characters. Allison Mack was one of my favorite actresses.
Yes.
Yet here we are at the end of 2018. What are your thoughts now, Trisha, looking back at this?
That is my thoughts. my thoughts are just a long, drawn-out, frustrated groan. Chloe is my favorite character on Smallville. She's also pretty much my favorite character on television. Which has to do with the fact that I identify a great deal with a young, intrepid reporter type, and also the fact that she kind of, spoiler alert, in later seasons becomes more of an Oracle type, who is my favorite comic book character. So that was really important to me, and I watched the show originally at the end of college, which was like, you know, the big, who am I and what am I going to do with my life moment.
Which is one the theme of the show!
Which is the theme of the show, turns out. It's the theme of most things on the CW.
So true.
And Chloe really resonated with me and really it was great. And then, you know, several years later, I became an intrepid reporter. And it turns out that I now have to report on Allison Mack being on trial for sex trafficking, among other things.
Be careful what you wish for. Right?
Oh,
Monkey's
yes.
Paw or something. I don't know. So yeah, you are a reporter, you're an entertainment reporter. Talk about what you do.
I am a writer for Sci-Fi Fangirls, which is the female focused and entirely female staffed vertical at Sci-Fi Wire, which is this is a really long explanation. The editorial arm of the Sci-Fi Channel, which you might know for things like Krypton, among many other things. Yes.
Sharknado.
So,
and,
shark. Yes, the Sharknadoes, the tornadoes full of sharks. We are that home as well.
You're that channel.
Yeah, we're that channel. But you know, in terms of this podcast, I know we're interested in Krypton, and also a bunch
Definitely.
Of really great shows and stuff. So we're the editorial arm, and you know, we write about science fiction and fantasy and other things of a genre nature. And I do a lot of stuff writing about comic books and television and movies based on comic books. Which, if you didn't know, there are a lot of, and also Smallville is one of them.
Yeah, definitely. Like, Smallville, when it first came out, it was it, pretty much.
Yeah,
you know?
Pretty much. Wow. And it was funny because, I mean, I'm sure you've mentioned this a few times before, but Smallville was sort of the first show on the then WB, what eventually became the CW, to be based on a DC comic property. And then they were like, oh, let's do more. So let's do Birds of Prey and make it terrible.
Yeah, okay, so there was we've talked around Birds of Prey a little bit on Twitter and also in our conversation. There was an announcement today, as of this recording, of like there's a Birds of Prey movie and they've cast certain actresses to be these characters.
Yes.
And sure, I'll believe it's Warner Brother in DC. I'll believe it when cameras are rolling. Okay? Like so how many movies have they announced?
they've announced a lot, and they haven't really started shooting very much of anything, except for, like, the Joker movie.
Except the Joker! There's a Joker movie! There's a standalone Joker movie, and it's in production right now. There's no Flash, there's no Cyborg, there's no Man of Steel sequel.
No.
I called it years ago. I said, if this franchise will never make it to Green Lantern, and here we are with a standalone Joker movie, but go ahead.
Yeah, but they did give Birds of Prey a release date.
Well, so did The Flash had a release date, too, of April 2018
Yes,
or something,
but The Flash was not Birds of Prey. Mm-hmm. So if they don't make the Birds of Prey movie, they're going to have problems.
But the big announcement that hooked me today,
yes,
this recording, was Batman will be absent from Gotham City and Birds of Prey. I'm like, oh, because that works so well in a TV show.
Yes.
You know, so are you excited for the Birds of Prey movie?
I am getting more excited the more that they talk about it. Originally, I was like, okay, the Birds of Prey movie. Because they did the TV show was terrible. And I don't really trust the DC Extended Universe.
What would give you any reason to doubt their ability to give us great films, Trisha?
I don't know, because like Batman v Superman was amazing, and Suicide Squad won an Oscar.
My God, that is the worst thing ever. I hate that they'll be able to say that forever.
But Wonder Woman was very good, and I do think that they're starting to sort of figure out what they sort of figured out they did everything wrong. And maybe they're trying to, you know, make good on this. Also, the Birds of Prey movie is co-produced by Margot Robbie, who seems to really enjoy the property and really believe in it, and was a great Harley Quinn. So I was okay with it at that point. And then every time they make a new announcement, I get more excited, with the exception of them announcing who was going to be involved, which characters, and not including Barbara Gordon, who is the Birds of Prey to me. But the story that is shaping up at this point seems like it's going to be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So, I'm down. I'm here for it.
If it comes out, I'll see it.
Yeah, if it happens, I will be in line to get tickets very quickly, and I will see it multiple times, even if I hate it. Because I support female films, and films about female superheroes. But I'm interested. I like the people they've cast. I like the actresses they've got so far. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is going to be Huntress, and then Journey Smollett-Bell is playing Black Canary, which is a really interesting casting decision they didn't have to make. It pissed off the internet, which I always enjoy, so...
Yeah, I like Mary Elizabeth Winstead a lot. I'm not as familiar with the other actress, but Mary Elizabeth Winstead, of course, from 10 Cloverfield Lane, from The Thing prequel remake, and also, of course, from Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. So I enjoy her as an actress, and I looking forward to seeing what she does with Huntress, which is a character who I actually liked on Arrow, the character, one of the many characters. Well, I was one of the few characters that Arrow forgot, you know?
Yeah,
I
did forget her, which is unfortunate. But... speaking of Scott Pilgrim, how many of the actors from that movie are now superheroes?
Yeah. My favorite ex-boyfriend is Chris Evans.
Chris Evans is a great ex-boyfriend. My favorite is Brandon Routh.
There you go. So
he has psychic vegan powers.
Oh boy, love that. But you know, bringing it around, Birds of Prey kind of was the only spinoff to the Smallville universe. In one of these episodes of Birds of Prey, they mention like a meteor shower and metahumans or something. Uh-huh. And it was like, oh, is this part of that? And then, you know, this never happened. Birds of Prey didn't even last a season.
Okay, it's bad.
So I did. Yeah, oh, yes. So I wonder if they would have crossed over at some point had it gone on for, you know, 5 or 6 years or something.
I imagine probably. It was really early on, too. It was in, like, the third season.
Yeah, it was in the second or third season. So it was super early.
Yeah, and it's very 2003.
Oh yeah,
it's like if you don't remember 2003, like if you're just too young to remember just 2003, go watch Birds of Prey, and that is what 2003 looked like if you were high school mall goth.
Say what you will about the stories and the aesthetic, if you will, I love the casting though. Dina Meyer was a great Robert Gordon. Oracle.
Dina Meyer was a great
Robert Gordon. Ashley Scott was a good Huntress for the Huntress they were presenting, I thought, and then forgive me, I forget the actress who played the not Black Canary daughter
Rachel
of Black
Spencer.
Canary. Okay. Yeah, she was good. Rachel. She wasn't Black Canary. She was the daughter of Black Canary for some reason. I don't know why. Why can't we get all three of the Birds of Prey, right? The proper three characters. What is the problem here?
But, like, not only that, how great would it have been to actually have Lori Loughlin playing Dinah Lance?
Why not?
And not just showing up for one episode and then dying.
Spoilers.
Sorry. Spoilers from 15 years
15 year old show. But hey, guys, it's on the DC Universe app, so everybody go check it out.
It is,
there.
And actually, I love that app. And Smallville's not there, but.
Not yet. I have a feeling, and I'm glad Hulu brought it into this world for everyone to see streaming. But I have a feeling whenever that Hulu contract expires, DC yeah. Universe will snatch it up, because I think that's the one weakest aspect of the DC Universe app. The other night I watched Batman Beyond: Return of the Joker on there, and it was the uncut version, even though it didn't say it was the uncut version. Ooh. I was mainly curious to see, is this going to be like the cleaned up, you know, rated G version? And it wasn't. It was the good unrated cut.
It was the good not for children version.
Yeah, this cartoon not for children. That's the way I like it. So I do think that's probably one of the things that's hurting them, is they don't have all the new, you know, CW shows or whatever on there. But one day I'm sure they will. So I'm glad that I decided to jump in and be on that app.
Yeah.
Smallville, right?
Yeah, Smallville. The thing that we're here to talk about.
Yeah. So you've been a big fan of Smallville for years. Chloe's your favorite character. What is like? So not to like ask you 20 questions about Smallville, just to kind of gauge where you're coming from, right, with your fandom. What is your favorite season? What is your favorite like era of the show?
Because
it goes through many forms, you know.
Probably like season 4/5 is around my favorite, because that's when Lois shows up, and there's a lot of really great Lois stuff in those seasons. But there's also a lot of really great Chloe stuff. It's also people learning new things about other people. I'm not trying to give spoilers to your audience, but I really like those two seasons. I also am actually a big fan of the later seasons because it's a little more Superman-y. And I appreciate what they end up doing with Lois and with the villains at that point. And I'm probably one of the few people who likes the last few seasons. But I do enjoy them. And I like characters that they bring in later. Like, I like Tess a lot, and I'm a big fan of this version of Oliver Queen and all that. So I think my favorite seasons are probably 4 and 5.
But it's an interesting combination. I feel like those are very different seasons. So
they are, they're very different seasons, which is why I have trouble choosing. But I think they do some cool stuff. Season 4, is the only season in which I do not hate Lana.
Interesting.
Yeah, because she's really annoying every other season. Season 4 also has, like, huge problems that I don't want to get into.
Season 4 is probably my least favorite season. But
one of my favorites because of Lois. Like, it added Lois, and there are a lot of episodes in that season that I really love.
Well, we'll get back to that, because you'll be back on next season to talk about it. But
for my favorite episode.
There you go. That wasn't even planned. I kind of just earmarked that. And you're like, oh my god, that's the one I want to talk about. I was like, oh, perfect.
I love that episode. Anyway, but we're talking about season 3 right now.
We are talking about season 3. So in my rewatching this, I think season 3 is right up there for me. This has been a great season so far, and I've really enjoyed it. I kind of enjoy that first era, you know?
Yeah.
Like seasons 1 through 3 had that flavor of Smallville. And then also, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, I love season 9.
Oh, yeah.
I think it had the best over arc, like, you know, when they got later on the season, they tried to be more serialized. And I think of all the serialized seasons, that one, like, held up the most and was the most satisfying and the best characters and all that stuff, Zod and whatnot. So, anyway, and I spoil the show pretty much every episode. I think I mentioned, like, Doomsday.
Okay, I don't want to spoil the show with all of your amazing listeners who haven't watched a single episode of this brand new show.
You are much more respectful than me. Thank you.
Yeah, so. But, like, season 7 is also really, really, really good.
That is my other least favorite season. So.
Really? That's amazing. We have totally opposite tastes. So do you hate this episode?
Oh, we'll find out. Let's get into it. What's the truth? We'll talk about it next.
It wasn't very long.
Miss Sullivan, you look a bit peaked. Well, I suppose a steady diet of truth can wear on a person. I understand you've borrowed one of our Luther Corp security guards.
Just trying to help my dad. What'd you do, blacklist him?
You're damn right I blacklisted him. He'll be lucky to find a job as a dishwasher. Well, I warned you there'd be repercussions if you defied me, and I'm a man of my word.
There's only one way to find out.
What?
Did you order Morgan Edge to kill your parents?
Of course I did, for their life insurance. I needed that money to start my company. Oh, I'm sorry you asked me that question, Miss Sullivan. That's very dangerous information for you to have. Why did you ask me that?
That's not important. This is...
Of course.
course I did, for their life insurance.
I have your entire confession recorded on my voicemail, and the only person that has the password is me. So if I were you, I would reconsider my father's employment situation.
I'm impressed, but unfortunately...
I don't respond to blackmail. But, you know, this isn't what's gonna get your father's job back.
And what would?
Information from an especially intransigent source.
Does the source have a name?
Two, actually. Jonathan and Martha Kent. But you need only ask one question.
Why would I ever do that?
Because I know that you have a special place in your heart for their son, and it's killing you that he's hiding something from you. And we both know that this may be the only opportunity you'll ever have to find out what that is.
What exactly is it that you want to know?
Where did Clark Kent come from?
Truth is the 18th episode of Smallville's third season. It aired on April 21st, 2004. It was written by Drew Z. Greenberg and directed by James Marshall. And Drew Greenberg, he was the executive story editor on Smallville in its third season. And he actually wrote, was credited writing three stories himself. He contributed to a lot of the season being the editor. But he did Slumber, Hereafter, and Truth. And then this was his final one. He moved on to other things after this season, and I was not a fan of Slumber at all. I really did like Hereafter, and here we go. His work will be judged on the performance of Truth, because we're at, so we'll get into it here. So episode starts out, and LuthCorp SUV pulls up to a house, and a car that is not Chloe's pulls up behind it, and she gets out of it. And I'm like, what are you doing, show? Did you give the characters yet another car? But wait. It's Gabe Sullivan's car, her dad. So good job, show. So for some reason, she's driving her dad's car.
Why is she driving her dad's car?
This whole episode, I thought about this, right? And not to jump entirely ahead, but at the end, you know, the what happens to the car accident and stuff.
Right.
I feel like the Volkswagen she has is like a product placement thing, and they didn't want to trash a Volkswagen. Like, they didn't want to, like, show one of their product placements getting destroyed. That was my assumption.
Anyway, so she's doing this whole thing with, like...
her dad's ex, like, or co-worker. Yeah.
So, yeah, like normal... college or high school students too.
Okay, so they're talking about, well, obviously her dad's been fired and she's trying to do this or that, and she tries to get an inside scoop from this guy about why her dad was blacklisted. She thinks he was. He can't help her, really. Then he goes inside, but then she looks at his rearview mirror and sees his LuthCorp security badge hanging there. And I'm like, okay, it's one thing you have a parking pass hanging there, but your security badge, this guy's just asking for it to be stolen, right?
He's not a very smart person. It's fine.
No. He works in the LuthCorp fertilizer plant, right?
He's like in accounting.
So she, of course, steals this to get into the LuthCorp plant, I guess to uncover evidence of, like, why her dad was fired or something. Like, I don't know why she went to the plant at this point. But that's not the point. The point is she's there. She starts sneaking around. There's a whole, like, you know, Mission Impossible thing in here. She gets spooked by a dog because it's animal testing because LuthCorp is evil. And hits like an alarm or something, and she gets sprayed by this green mist in Smallville 101, right? Kryptonite used for experiments, right?
Right.
And I gotta say, Lex has terrible security, not just at home, yes, because people are always barging the mansion, but also here at the plant, right? These are not this is the most poorly secured facility ever.
It's the most poorly secured high security facility in the world.
Because she's running around. I mean, there looks like to be a good number of people chasing her. They just can't get her. It was like a golf cart. She even does like a whole like barrel roll under the closing door. You know, classic action movie stuff to get out of there. And I don't know, like, it is ridiculous that this teenage girl can escape. But I actually found it a pretty fun action sequence to start the episode, right?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And, like, there's so much weird crap in this episode. It's one of those, like... it's really fun if you don't think too hard, kind of episodes, which is frequent, you know, frequent on this one.
That's why you love season 4 and 7 so much.
Yes. Okay. Don't think too hard. They're great. The tuck and roll. You got to know how to tuck and roll if you're a girl like Chloe. I don't really understand why this is what, like, her first instinct all the time. Like, I get being a reporter, but A, this is breaking the law. And B, like, you are not a superhero. You are not safe in any of these situations. Please stop breaking in to high security facilities. I don't care that your dad needs a job.
Well, and it is a very proto Lois Lane thing to do, because she is the Lois of the show. before Lois. Now, let me ask you this, because I was big on this train back in the day. Were you ever a fan of, like, the Chloe's Lois thing? That was not your deal?
No, I was not.
Okay.
I understand where people come from. Also, I watched the show after the fact, so I knew that Lois was coming and that Chloe was not Lois. I probably would have been if I were watching this when I was a teenager and, like, you know, big into the conspiracy theories, especially because, you know, when Chloe gets fired from the Daily Planet, she turns in those things and is like, use my cousin's name. She's not into journalism. But no, I was not on that train.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I just had to ask. You know, so. I was all in on that.
No, I understand. I am not surprised.
So we get to the main credits. We come back, and it's another day at Smallville High School. And Clark, who apparently writes for the Talent, or I always get these confused, the Talent and the Torch, because they're the same, like, word, and I think you're probably the same amount of letters in them.
It's
and I
the
say
torch.
These words all the time. Yes. It's the Torch and the Talent. Talent is Lana. The Torch is Chloe. Anyway, yes. Clark, even though we never really see him do much reporting unless the plot calls for it, he's supposed to get an interview with the Teacher of the Year, and he hasn't been able to do it. So Chloe's just trying to hype him up. And again, it's pretty fun to see her try to, like, hype him up for journalism and stuff, and set him on that path, which takes him years to get to, but he does get there.
Yeah, let's be honest about one thing, though. Clark does not do much reporting because Clark is lazy and doesn't want to.
Well, you know, maybe.
He doesn't try very hard, okay? There's no way you have to try that hard to get a really quick and easy interview with the Teacher of the Year. I don't care what she's secretly hiding.
But she's tough, you know. She's evasive.
She's
busy. So Chloe and Clark do kind of corner her, and Chloe asks her, like, "Well, hey, just take a few minutes," and we see this, like, again. I always go to CSI for this because this is where this comes from, the early 2000s, right? We see these CSI spores inside her, like, body, like, spew out of what she's saying. And we start to get a clue of what actually has happened to her. And instead of giving him, like, a BS excuse, she says, "Oh," the teacher's like, "Oh, well, I have to go do a pop quiz because instead of preparing a lesson today, I watched TV all night." And they're, like, all look at each other and say, "Oh, that's kind of weird." But they just go about their business after that. And I thought that was kind of funny to kind of establish what might be going on with her powers here, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting that she's sort of, like, spewing these spores all over people all the time. It's so bizarre, and, like, it doesn't affect Clark at all, which is interesting because almost everything ends up affecting Clark because of the kryptonite, but this does not.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. There's some things, and it kind of adds to Chloe's suspicion later on, right?
Right.
Like, when everyone else is suffering something, Clark doesn't. Because I don't know why, right? Because you think he'd suffer from it even more because it's kryptonite-based. But a lot of, like I don't know. There's other examples on the show that my mind is blanking right now. But where affects everyone, but it not, he's like the Spock of the show. We're like, "Oh, my green blood has saved me, Captain," kind of thing. That's what's going on with Clark, right?
Right, exactly. And it's so bizarre. But I just found it hilarious that she's just, like, spitting spores into people's faces all over the place, and that it's not contagious.
Yes. See, I understand why they wanted to visualize what she was doing, but you're absolutely right. If it's airborne at that point, why is it just Chloe? Why isn't it floating around? It opens a lot of questions. I don't think, thinking about it, is this the only time we see it in the whole episode?
Yeah, like only see it the one time, and then it's just her talking, and you just assume that she's spitting.
They probably thought, A, this looks really stupid, and B, we don't have the budget for this crap anymore, so we'll just do this one time.
So she's in that lab, which they're obviously testing on animals. But my question is, are they testing this on that dog? And how do they know if it works?
That is an excellent point.
Does the dog ask them questions in dog?
Oh, my God. Oh, Smallville. Yeah, that's an I didn't even think about that, because you're right. The whole reason she gets sprayed is because the button to set this off is next to, like, a Doberman pincher or something.
Yep.
So, wow, that's animal testing will not get you very far in truth serum.
Yes, it will.
Oh, man.
You can totally tell. You hook them up to a polygraph, you know exactly.
But yes, polygraph the cat. So, we move on to the Torch office, and Clark and Pete are talking about their plans for the night or the weekend or something. And Chloe's like, "Hey, so what are you guys doing?" And Pete's like, "Yeah, we're going to watch the big game." And Clark's like, "Yeah, I'm going to get dinner."
That's a spot-on impression.
No, thank you. So it comes out that Clark, Pete reveals to Chloe, she's like, Clark in the kitchen? That I'd love to see that or something. And he's like, no, he's just going to run down to the stadium and pick up some shark dogs before tip-off. And she's like, whoa, wait a minute. You're telling me he's going to make a six-hour drive to get some hot dogs? So put a pin in this right now. This is crucial. This is like Exhibit A. And how far is Metropolis from Smallville on this show? All right?
Yes.
So it is a stat. This is, they've talked around it many times and all this, but we have established numbers now, okay, that a six-hour round trip from Smallville, okay, so that means 3 hours each way. So Metropolis is 3 hours away. It is canon. Yes. It is on screen. This isn't a comic book or some comment from a writer or something, right? This is what is going on. So you think about that, and you think about how ridiculous is the rest of this show when people are going back and forth to Metropolis all day, right?
Yes, all the time.
But anyway, if I could have a soundboard whenever something comes up later on the show, I'd play this clip, which is like, it take you 6 hours to whatever. Anyway, also,
you have a little like conspiracy board where you're mapping every time they mention how far Metropolis is from Smallville.
I should collect all these things, really, but I haven't really documented because I don't think we have had an official time yet. But I do think it gets smaller and smaller as it goes on. I think they even mention how long it is, and it's not a 3 hour trip because obviously the show becomes Metropolis basically by the end. But anyway, here it is, guys. Season 3, they establish the distance. Also, again, these people don't know what season sports take place in. They mention tip off, which is basketball.
Yes.
But then he says a shark dog, and it's Metropolis Sharks or the football team. And there's no way all the teams are the Sharks. Okay, maybe there's no way.
Maybe it's a year-round football team.
Arena football or something like that. Anyway, I had to point that out as well. But yes. Pete, so anyway, all that to say, all that tangents aside, right? Pete starts talking about Clark's secret here, and we see Clark's face, and like, what are you doing, Pete? And Pete's like, oh, because Chloe says something, you know, 6 hours. He's like, oh, when Clark does supersonic, he can get there in 10 minutes. And Clark's like, he's just kidding. Time to go. So pulls him in the hallway. He's like, what are you doing, man? He's like, well, I was just compelled to tell her the truth. And we have a plus one for episode title, said in episode, because they have the word truth. The truth, which is said many times.
Yes.
Throughout this episode. But we're covered on the episode title, said in episode. But I thought this is a fun way to, again, escalate, showing, you know, what Chloe's ability now is with Pete.
Right.
So let me cut to the Lex plot. Not as disconnected as some other episodes has been, but we just, you know, cut to Lex in Metropolis, right, to insert his plot. And Lionel has called him in to question him about the incident at the Luthcorp plant, because, you know, obviously he's heard about it. I like the continuity of Lionel, who got pistol whipped by Jonathan in the last episode with a shotgun, you know, on the face, and he still has that wound on his face that's healing. I'm like, good job, Smallville makeup department. Continuity win, right? But, you know, this is a typical Luther scene. They go back and forth, and basically, they, you know, we all have our secrets. I mean, this is like an ad-lib Luther scene between the two of these guys, right?
Right. And this is like the height of Luther animosity.
Yeah, because, you know, Lex is having his dad, you know, under investigation from the FBI. They even go as far to have it like a scene where, just a mini scene, when this conversation is over, Lex goes out to his car and like pulls out the wiretap just in case you forgot.
Right, and, that the FBI is involved.
So then we go back to Clark and Chloe, and they're working on, I guess, this I don't know, year in review newspaper, whatever it is, at the Kent farm. And Martha comes home, and she has a lot of groceries, so Clark goes out to get them for her, and it gets a little hashtag too real here, because Chloe, like, starts asking Martha, like, oh, how are things going with Jonathan after his, you know, heart attack and heart surgery? And Martha's like, oh, not good, actually. He's angry and depressed, and, like, and I wonder if he's the same man that I married. It's like, whoa! But anyway, this gets pretty heavy, right?
Right. Like, yeah, let me unload this on this 17-year-old girl who's friends with my son.
And Chloe, like, doesn't even know how to take it. And then she starts talking about, well, Clark blames himself, of course, because his biological father drives. Like, well, Clark comes in right at the right time. He's like, whoa! And Clark, I think Clark's pretty quick on his feet here to say, like, oh, well, yeah, not she was being metaphorical because I was adopted. But he spins it pretty well, even though it's nonsense, right?
Right.
So, but I've heard Chloe, like, man, it's like, I had questions enough about Clark. This is really pushing it over the edge with what Martha has said here. But anyway, she apologizes for it. But then Clark thinks, I mean, seeing what happened with the teacher and then Pete and then now his mom, people that would definitely not give up his secret like that, he knows something is up. So,
right. This is when he finally figures out that, like, oh, there's something up with Chloe. Like, obviously, you know, you wouldn't offer personal information about your marriage. Let's just be glad that she didn't go into, like, what their sex life is like after we had the heart attack. It's just, I don't know if we're ever going to get back to, you know, where we were before. And
it's not the man I married.
It's not the man I married. And,
oh, goodness.
Yeah, that's just where I was expecting it to go, to be honest. And I'm sure that's where, like, the panicked look on Chloe's face comes from. Like, oh, my God, I'm like, it's going to get really awkward. But, you know, it's a nice moment, I think, for Martha, because they don't really talk about their relationship very much, which is, you know, it's a little nice moment. But also, like, wow, that's oversharing much.
Yeah, that's a good point, because the Kents have a lot of great scenes with each other, right? But that's the only times they can, like, be straight up and honest. And she's not going to talk about that stuff to Clark or Jonathan. So, I mean, you would never heard her say that to any other character in any other situation.
Right,
so,
exactly.
That is a nice window into that.
They also never refer back to it. So it's not like, you know, then it matters.
That's true. Of all the things, man, you're right. This episode has a lot of cool, like, reveals from characters, but about only half of them actually matter as we continue to find out. The Talon here. The Talon. See, I got it right this time. Mm-hmm. They're at the Talon, and Lana is reading her Paris brochure. So I'm like, this is where this starts. Right? They've been planting some seeds in the last couple episodes, and Lana's like, I'm questioning what decisions I've made and if I want to experience life. And here it is, the Paris art school. Because as we all know, Lana's really into
Paris
art.
Lana's so into art. She's been all about art for 3 whole seasons. This makes perfect sense.
This is what we call, I mean, it's not even a retcon, it's just lazy character development.
It's
random,
it's what it is. Yeah.
Like, there could have been 100 other reasons for her to leave. Like, I'm going to go live with Nell. I'm going to live with Henry Small and his wife. Remember those guys? The show doesn't.
Remember my father? Yeah.
Talk about biological father. Lana did meet his biological father.
No, I'm going to go to Paris.
Well, it's like a Disney cliche kind of thing. But anyway, she talks more about that later. But Clark has come here to, you know, talk to Chloe, talk to Lana about Chloe and see if she noticed anything weird with her. It's funny that Lana, like, seems disappointed that this is what Clark had come to talk to her about. It's like, Okay, well, whatever. But then, again, current events in mind, the scene, you know, did make me, like, shake my head because he's like, Klepto Chloe doesn't sound like her. I'm like, ugh. because Lana had said that a phone call had come from some guy at Luther Corp, and he had said, Chloe had stolen his security badge and stuff. So I wonder, did she break the window to get in that car to take his badge? Now that I think about it, how do you think she got that badge?
He's not smart. He left his car unlocked, obviously, because he trusts Chloe to not do stupid shit. Yeah, he doesn't think, hey, this 17-year-old child is going to steal my security badge that I conveniently left in my window. What I find interesting, so they don't really talk a lot about the fact that Lana and Chloe live together.
No, they drop that quick after, like, first, like, 2 episodes that,
like,
it happened, right?
They do. Like, so she talks about being roommates, and, like, I like that. I like that they made the two female characters actual friends and not enemies or anything, because, you know, in the comics, Lana and Lois were always pitted against each other, and that's unfortunate. And I really like that they made them friends and that they sort of had them kind of randomly live together in the beginning of the season because of reasons. And but it's just like, so after Chloe's dad loses his job, Lana still stays with them. So I'm assuming Nell sends money.
But, you know, hey, the town's raking it in, you know, but Lana's probably paying for that house. But they're living in, if you think about
they're
it.
They're actually living with Lana. It's not the other way around.
It's not the turntables. You know, that is a good point about them not being catty to each other.
Yeah.
You know, over Clark. But I will say the universe kind of shrank when that happened, because it's like Lana now has no other friends than these, like, 4 people.
True.
Like Lex, Chloe, Pete, and Clark.
And honestly, Lex needs other friends.
Oh, yes, big time. Like,
we don't know how old he is. They never mention how old he is, but I feel like he's in his mid to late 20s at this point.
Right? There was something, I don't know if this is on the show established at some point or not, but it was something where I believe that he was like 5 or 6 years older than Clark. So he's like 21 in like the first season. So he'd be like 23
that makes sense,
3 or 24.
He goes to like his 10th high school reunion or something in season 6.
Okay, so you do the math.
So, like, say he's, 18, like, 23, 24.
28. Okay, no, that works, because, like, 22-ish, season 1, season 6, he'd be 28. Yeah, I'll go with that. So, yeah.
There you go. But, like, seriously, he also needs different friends, because these are high school juniors, and these are all your friends.
But he is kind of socially inept, and that's part of his problem. He's looking for love, as we find out in this
episode.
In
all the wrong
so.
Places.
Yes, exactly. So, Chloe is starting to, I don't know if she hasn't realized it yet, but this is the main, this next scene is when she realizes what has happened to her and what her abilities are now, because she catches this teacher of the year, Miss Taylor, I think, and her son coming to school, or walking to school, and she's like, oh, sorry to ambush you, but I need to get this interview in, and she's like, okay, only because I know you'll never let it go, and you're like, okay, this is starting out innocent enough, mm-hmm. but then she's like, what's the hardest thing about being a teacher? She's like, hiding the truth. And she's like, well, what do you mean? She's like, well, I've been on the run since the 1970s. And it's like, what did you do? She's like, I was part of a radical group. They killed a guard at a bank.
She did exactly what every single character exactly like this had ever done in the 70s, which is they were part of a radical group who bombed stuff.
And she only drove the getaway car, Trisha. You know, that's all. She didn't expect anyone to get killed, so.
You never expect anyone to get killed when you're using explosives.
Now, what I found very interesting, that in the Smallville, the official companion, season 3, by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold, it's revealed that originally the secret the teacher was keeping was that she was going to be having a relationship with a student. Yeah, right? Mark Verheiden. The writer-producer on the show had this to say. The teacher having an affair with a pupil was one of the first thoughts we had, but we decided it wasn't right for our school. It was frankly a rather unpleasant place to go on a show that's lighthearted, having that at the center of it. The story came out of a retreat we all went on, where we went away for a day and sat around trying to come up with ideas and notions for stories. So that's cool. They have, like, you know, little retreats to think up stories. But but the main point of that was I found it very ironic that they say, oh, no, we don't want to do that, right? Fast forward, like, a few episodes later in season 4, Jason Teague is his football coach at your school dating Lana. Way to go, Smallville.
Oh, my God. Yeah, true. Jason's supposed to be younger, obviously, and I don't know. I don't even know at that point. They're thinking, you know what's much lighter and more fitting for our show is if she blew a dude up.
Yeah. That's the thing, though. That is American sensibility, right? Violence, sure. Sex, no. That's the worst. It's like, no, you know, sex is part of life. You know, killing people isn't. You know, I'm just saying.
I mean,
out
to
there.
Be fair, to be fair, a teacher having an affair with a student is not just sex. It is statutory rape. But still.
which made for a great episode of Smallville back in season 2, Heat.
Yes. Oh, God, that episode.
That episode, and I love that episode. I do. It's really one of my favorite episodes of the show. Would never get made today. Never.
It would not. Actually, well, maybe it would. You think about it. I don't know if you watch Riverdale, but Riverdale started with Archie having an affair with a teacher, so.
Okay. I haven't watched Riverdale, but I heard about that as well, and I guess you're right. I guess that undercuts my entire argument, so I stand corrected. So.
Yeah, and she was not some kind of supernatural being, okay? Mm-hmm.
That was
she
just
was
people,
just a lady.
Mean people. Gotcha.
Who had stolen the identity of a nice old woman.
Ooh, spoilers.
Yeah, season 1. Anyway.
Anyway, so Chloe decides that, oh, all right, I'm going to walk through the school now and get secrets from everyone. And this is a pretty amusing sequence, isn't it, Trisha?
Yeah, I actually really like this sequence. So I think Chloe's decision run that story in the paper because it is a story and she is a journalist.
Her walking the hard-hitting Smallville torch, right?
Yeah. Well, the hard-hitting Smallville torch that breaks a lot of news. But also, like, her walking through the school with that sort of, like, swagger was a little much. Because now everybody hates her.
Yeah, and this, both of these shots of Chloe yes. are featured in the season 4 opening credits.
They are. It is a good one for the opening credits. In the context of the episode, it's like, girl, what are you doing?
Well, I think the implication, or one of the implications they make is that Chloe is, and again, added to the tally board, plus one for under the influence. Mm-hmm. Because the actual serum is affecting her behavior. I mean, that's something they kind of insinuate a little bit to make Chloe not seem like this just power-hungry, crazy reporter person.
See, and I've never really gotten that from the episode. I always just assumed, like, this is what Chloe is like when she gets good answers from people, is that she's gonna kind of become a crazy person. She gets a little power mad in later seasons when she has the ability to, like, tap phones and do a bunch of stuff. So I don't know that it's entirely the serum. It is where I just start to disagree with her choices and her behavior is when she, like, gets kind of on her high horse. But I do really enjoy the sequence with her, like, going through the school and asking people questions, because she's, of course, asking people who are not nice to her. And I understand that point of view. I enjoy the fact that she gets those kind of answers, and that they went the route of, like, oh, you want to take your quarterback to the prom.
Yeah, she goes through these jocks. I mean, she goes through a series of people, right?
Yes.
And, you know, this group of jocks, and she's like, hey, Doug, if you could take anyone to prom, who would it be? And he's like, that'd be my man Fitz.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
He just cut over to the guy. He's like, whoa. And then I think, like, his implication was the cheerleader was his girlfriend, I think, and that kind of made it even more awkward. So
yeah, like, they're all there with their girlfriends who are also cheerleaders, and it's like, oh, who would you take to the prom if you could take anybody? And he says, well, that'd be Fitz, of course. And she's like, I like that Chloe, A, does not make fun.
Right.
She's like, whoa, wow, that's not what I was expecting. If the show were made today, I would hope that Fitz would then turn around and be like, dude, I didn't know you felt that way.
Yes, if this were Glee, it would totally go that direction. So
just... if it were Glee, it would. But also, I would hope that it would go that way in other shows too. I would appreciate it if it did.
Well, then the guy, you know, he gets kind of mad at Chloe, and Clark steps. He's like, "Hey, it's off the record." I love that. That's a great little moment.
You did still say it in the middle of the hallway.
Yes, in front of your girlfriend. So good luck with that.
Yeah.
But this is when Chloe really takes a turn, right? Because she's like, what do you keep hiding from me, Clark? And then he, like, you can totally tell, he's like, whoa, I can't believe you just asked me that. All right, even though it doesn't work on him, and she notices that. She's like, and you didn't answer it. That's interesting. So she again, more ticks the Clark is different box. But that really just, that really crushes Clark, because he's like, Chloe knows that I'm really private, and she asked me that anyway, and that's a big strike against our friendship here. And yeah, I think that's why they wanted to show that it wasn't her more than the disease, because in the companion, actually, again, Allison Mack had this to say about, you know, if it was her or the disease. She says, I don't think she's a heartless person, so that was difficult. James Marshall was directing, and he's wonderful, and Tom was very involved with that episode because it was such a risky story for my character. We spoke a lot about it and actually reshot the last scene because it ended up not being what anybody wanted. It was a really delicate balance because you had to make it incredibly obvious that it wasn't Chloe. It was the drug that was responsible, so she didn't lose all of her compassion. That was the biggest obstacle to overcome. And I don't think they overcame it, because here we are talking about, like, I don't know.
So. Right. I don't know that they did. If it was meant to just be the drug, fine. I think it makes Chloe a more interesting character if it were not the drug. Like, same. Obviously, it's not cool that she's asking him, but I get it. She's a curious person. And the reason that I really like this character, and they draw her out, and sort of the reaffirming of why Clark won't tell Chloe a secret, even though she's one of his best friends, is, like, he doesn't trust her because she does stuff like this. And I get that, and I like it as a character bit. But also, the difference between the way that Chloe handles not knowing Clark's secret and the way Lex handles not knowing Clark's secret. Because they're sort of two sides of the same very dangerous coin.
Very, very true. Very true.
And I just really enjoy that. And it's a part of the character that I like, that I think that I just think if you make it just the drug being the reason that she's doing it, it sort of takes away from what that character could be about. And I like it. I don't know. That's me. It's my thing. I like it.
Well, we also have a plus one for red jacket, blue shirt, because Clark is wearing his pseudo Superman costume. So another tally for the tally board will add up at the end of the episode. So then, seeing all this now, this is a problem, right? So Clark breaks into Luther Corp to, you know, I guess investigate what happened. And Lex has cleared out the place, but left the file cabinet there with a folder called Levitas, not to be confused with Veritas, but Levitas, another variation of, you know, the word truth in some, you know, Latin or something. And of course, Lex finds him. He's like, Clark, what are you doing down here? And I like, at this point, Lex just, he knows Clark's going to lie to him about everything, so whatever. But Clark's like, yeah, I just wandered in. The door was open. He's like, it looked broken to me, but I'll have to talk to my security people. So anyway, again, this is a very generic, like, Clark and Lex, like, encounter each other investigating something and blah, 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 blah. But it's revealed that this is an old project of Lionel's and that they never got past the stage where they could examine potential side effects. They don't know what might happen to Chloe. Clark still doesn't tell Lex who it is, but eventually he does because that's what Chloe ends up at Lex's mansion. But anyway, a great scene here. I like it between Clark and Lex. So,
yes.
But then we see these, you know, we don't know any potential physical side effects yet, but there are a lot of social side effects for Chloe because she goes to the Talon and everyone hates her. Like, people are clearing out and it's sad, funny, but also appropriate because she's gone power mad with this truth serum.
Yes, she has. And so she clears out the lunch rush, as she says. And
the lunch, what is it, Saturday? It better be, or Sunday.
They're just allowed to walk around, okay? Who needs school? And of course, Lana is then answering her questions truthfully. And I kind of appreciate it because I think Lana would answer this way anyway. I would hope anyway, if you're going to be that close friends with somebody, you should be able to tell them, like, you're being kind of horrible. Nobody wants to hang out with you, including me.
This might be the best scene between them so far in the show. Like, this is one of my favorite scenes between the two of them. Because you're right, she's just kind of telling them what's up. And I liked how at the beginning of that whole exchange, Chloe's like, at least you're still talking to me. And Lana's like, for now. Like, she's going to stop at some point. Yeah. But this is when she has her big reveal about the Paris art school, right? What'd you think about that?
I mean, I still am like, yeah, because you love art, which we've seen so many indications of this. And I mean, I don't know. I can't even remember what Chloe's reaction is other than like, why didn't you tell me about this beforehand? And it's like, she didn't have to. It's not her job to tell you about things. I don't know. People get annoyed at Lana for not telling them when she's doing something. It's like, but she has her own life. She can make her own decisions.
Yeah, so she basically tells Chloe that she didn't tell this because she can't trust her. It's like, whoa. And you can tell this really hurts Chloe's feelings, but I mean, based off this, seems pretty wise move on Lana's part, based off Chloe's behavior in this episode.
One of the nice things about Chloe is that her personality always goes back and forth between wanting to be a good reporter, which means, you know, everything being on the record all the time and people not really knowing what to say around you, and also wanting to be the kind of person that people trust and like open up to. Which is nice. I really like this character. It's frustrating.
Then we get the kind of weaponization of Chloe, right? The Chloe's arms race is happening here because Chloe comes to Luther Mansion because Lex wanted to talk to her about what had happened. But then also the main reason beyond that was he wants to use her against his father to find out what happened to Lex when he got his memory wiped. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was a really cool angle for Lex because, of course, he's always thinking about how can I use this to my advantage, right?
Right.
And then we get this great, like, it's actually very well directed, too, because Chloe's, like, circling Lex and they're having this discussion because she realizes, oh, I have this ability. I'm going to get some answers from Lex about stuff. And she's like, why do you keep coming back to your father? Why don't you just walk away? He's like, because I want the one thing he's never going to give me. And she's like, what's that? And he's like, I want him to love me. I'm like, damn. Like, that is truth. Like, there's some, like, universal
want
truth
to
this.
Want him to love me.
But, yeah, that is some universal dysfunction to these Luther family. I love it.
Love. Yes. All Lex wants is to be loved Which this feeds very well into the next episode, which you'll talk about at a different time with someone who is not me. It's just so much of a, all Lex wants is to be loved and nobody loves him.
It is tragic, though. You know, I mean, like, there is the whole nature versus nurture thing with Lex is interesting. One of the most interesting things of the show. Because if one of these people would have loved him and accepted him, maybe he wouldn't have gone evil.
Right? Yeah, and that's a thing that comes up in season 5 when they do the Christmas episode with him.
Lexmas. You could not do a Christmas episode on the show and not call it Lexmas, right?
At least once. And I hated that episode the first time I saw it because Lex was not as interesting a character to me as he became. But like the second time I watched through, I was like, oh no, this is actually a really interesting conversation about like the kind of person Lex would be if people just told him stuff and trusted him and loved him and like gave a crap. But at the same time, like he's got a personality issue, and he like I said, it's the difference between the way that Lex reacts to not knowing things and the way that Chloe reacts to not knowing things. I find them to be interesting foils. But then of course you have Lex, the guy who just wants to be loved but has absolutely no qualms about putting a 17-year-old girl in the way of his father.
Well, that's Lex Luthor for you, right? Yeah. So we get to the hospital and Clark has told Chloe there's like a big story coming up, and there's a meeting there because he wants her to get checked out because he's heard about those potential side effects to this truth serum. I mean, this episode's kind of like what, like reverse liar, I guess, right? Because everyone else has to tell the truth. But anyway, just, and think about that's what we're talking about here. But anyway, Pete shows up to like take some pictures or whatever because he's a photographer now, as we established in like Velocity. He's like, I was a decent photographer. I was like, whoa, since when have you been a photographer? But anyway, he's the Jimmy Olsen before Jimmy Olsen, right? So Clark wants to get him out of there ASAP because Chloe's coming and he doesn't want Chloe to start asking him questions, right? And I swear, this is hilarious, this moment, because Pete goes in this elevator and then Chloe and him start talking and then Clark just kind of like reaches in and forces his way back into the elevator. I love this moment. I love this scene between them, huh?
I love this whole scene. I love everything about it. I love the fact that Pete finally admits he has a crush on Chloe. Mm-hmm. It's too bad they didn't get to do anything with it.
Yeah, again, another drop thing, like Martha, right? You're like, oh, okay, this is gonna lead. Nope.
You know, right, I mean, he just kisses her plenty of time on the mouth.
Yeah, big time. And they had plenty of time to deal with this before he left, and they just leave this hanging there, right?
They do. They just sort of like they do bring it back in season 7 when he comes back, but it's
we don't talk about that episode.
That episode is awful. The episode that is an advertisement for Stride gum. But
it's kryptonite free.
It's not. But yeah, I like this episode a lot. I like that it's a moment for them. I like that Pete points out that like I never said anything because you're in love with Clark and you would never give me the time of day, and it's nice to see that somebody has a crush on Chloe. She gets screwed over so many times.
I'm so happy she ended up with Oliver.
Yes.
Because, like, look, if you're not going to end up with Superman, end up with Batman of this universe, the Green Arrow is, right? Because you had so many, like, and at the end here, I'll mention, like, they tease so many dark endings for Chloe on this show. I'm glad she got to live happily ever after. But anyway, that not being the point, it's great that Pete had this, like, backup big secret, right?
Yeah, that it was that as actually the big secret he's been keeping. It has nothing to do with Clark and everything. Feelings about Chloe, and I find that fun.
And then Chloe, she starts having some headaches, and you know, luckily they're in a hospital, so we have our, you know, this becomes our hospital visit plus one because Chloe gets admitted to the hospital. So add that to the tally board. But yeah, she starts having some headaches and whatever, and they wheel her off to be examined. So those physical side effects are finally starting to happen to her. And I'll buy that if you're gonna have these kind of chemicals in your body that compels someone to tell the truth, there's going to be some give on your end, you know? So I like there was a physical toll to it. Obviously it's a plot device to have to cure
you're
her of this, but it makes sense.
You're just spewing spores. You're just spewing spores everywhere. You don't know what that fungus is doing in your body. Okay.
There's not been one science fiction story where spores was a good thing.
Spores is never a good thing. Spores is always bad. Always terrible. Never
good. So with Chloe out of the picture, Clark now has to, become the reporter that we all want him to be. And he's at the torch doing some internet research. Pete comes in. He's like, hey, did you hear they arrested Miss Taylor? And Clark's like, yeah, I heard. Oh, by the way, set up for the end of the episode, we saw her son lash out at Chloe at the Talon area. He's like, you're going to pay.
Yeah.
So that sets up the end. Because I was thinking, oh, this is going to go somewhere. And then I'm like, it's been a while since we've seen this guy. And then, of course, he comes back in the end.
But, he was buying hair gel, okay?
that guy looked about 35, by the way. But all these guys do, right? So this is a good moment between Clark and Pete. Because Pete's like, hey, man, what's up? Why didn't you tell me this? He's like, you know, I never had a chance and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, stand in your shadows, like being on the dark side of the moon. So... it's a good, they rarely, as you said, Pete, it's good to get him to have stuff.
Cause yes.
When he does have stuff, it's questionable at best, like, you know, velocity. So
it's good for characters to have stuff.
So, you know, Clark's going through her computer, right? Yeah. To do the, and I thought, is he going to find those pictures from the spring formal? That's what
Please
I thought.
Please do.
Lana found them. You can find them. So anyway. I know he's
struggles. He's not, okay,
he's not the investigative reporter he'll grow up to be. But anyway, he does find this lead on a guy who was like the, you know, subject zero or the test subject of this, or a lead scientist.
Some
connection, right?
That's what it was. Project.
Okay, so he's gonna go track down that lead. But meanwhile, we have again. I love Lionel and Chloe's interactions together. They're two of the best actors and two of the best characters on this show.
I agree.
So he comes to visit her in the hospital because he's deduced what's happened, I guess. Mm-hmm. And this is a great scene because Chloe realizes this is a unique opportunity to get some blackmail on Lionel. So she I'm not sure how this worked in 2003, but she pulls out her cell phone and calls her voicemail.
Yep.
In order to record the conversation. Some great audio quality, by the way, for holding the phone behind her back. Anyway, I have wireless mics that have worse quality than her cell phone from 2003. But first, she asks about if he blackmailed her dad. He's like, you're damn right I blackmailed him. You know, he'll be lucky to get a job as a dishwasher. So it's funny how when the characters are talking and telling the truth or whatever, mm-hmm. They have a little bit of a different like expression in the way they talk.
Yeah.
That because you never hear Lionel wouldn't talk that way. But then he realizes what's going on. He's like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. But then she asks him if he hired Morgan Edge to help kill his parents. He's like, of course I did. I need that money to start my company. And he's like, oh, that's a very dangerous question you have asked, Miss Sullivan. You shouldn't have done that. So, but she shows that she'd recorded it on his phone. She's going to use it as leverage against him, which is a risky move, but a pretty smart one on Chloe's part, I think.
And the fact that she, like, TV characters do this all the time, but why, when you have recorded a guy saying, yes, I hired someone to kill my parents when I was very young and could probably do it many times over right now, would you be like, oh, it's a good thing I recorded you saying that.
And like, your plan is to blackmail this person? Good luck. It's like the Dark Knight when the guy wants to blackmail Batman, right?
Yeah.
And Mr. Reese, which is like Chris Nolan's version of the Riddler, because he wasn't going to get there. That's my theory on that. you know that scene? I haven't had a chance to talk about this on the podcast. I'm going to bring it up here. Maybe you thought the same thing.
Sure.
So Mr. Reese, right?
Yes.
He goes to Morgan Edge. At Morgan Edge, see? Morgan Freeman. It's all Smallville. It's all mixing together. He goes to Lucius Fox. And he's like, what are you building for next? A spaceship or something? Because he has the schematics for the Batmobile and all that. I thought he was just basically saying, hey, Wayne Enterprises is financing Batman. That's bad, right? But then Lucius Fox turns around and pretty much gives away the secret. He's like, you saying that one of the most powerful, richest men in the world spends his nights beating criminals to a pulp? And your plan is to blackmail this person? And it's like, hey, Lucius, dude, I think you just gave away Bruce Wayne was Batman to this dude. Like, I don't think he thought that. Until just now. Did you ever think about that?
No.
You're watching The Dark Knight? Let's see. It just blew your mind.
I mean, I don't know. I've watched The Dark Knight a couple of times. I don't remember a lot of it. I have thoughts beyond the scope of this podcast about that show and the movie. But that's interesting. I like that idea that he decided to throw in, you know, a version of the Riddler. But it is very much like that. That it's like, oh, here is the thing.
Here's the evidence I have against you, so you can use it against me later. So, totally. And he does, in like one of the best endings of the show ever. But we'll get there. We're getting there.
Yes.
So Lionel turned this around on Chloe, and he wants her in order to like unblacklist her dad or something, right? I think that's the leverage he has. He wants her to go ask the Kents where Clark Kent came from, right? That's which again dovetails in the next episode when he's asking other people those questions about Clark. So this doesn't track with season 7, by the way. I think. I don't know. Veritas. Think about, forget Levitas. Veritas. It's, you know, all this Lionel trying to figure out Clark doesn't hold up in the retconning of season 7, in my opinion. That's a big problem I have with that season. But like you say, if you don't think about it, maybe it doesn't matter. I don't know. I'll try to turn my brain off more for those episodes in season 7.
Stop thinking so hard. God.
But he makes a great point. He's like, look, you want to know this too, so go ask him. You know?
Right.
So she goes on her way. Meanwhile, Clark goes and I guess the leader of this project is homeless now. Is that what you got from this dude living in a? I don't know where this guy was. Like I thought he lived in a repair shop or whatever. He has a refrigerator though. So.
I mean, he talks about how he was dishonorably discharged because of Lionel, and like I mean, I could imagine anyone who crosses the Luthers is going to end up homeless or something.
Mm-hmm. But he has that refrigerator. He's been keeping that serum in for the last 5 years. Am I right?
Yeah, obviously.
So he explains to Clark that he quit because there were side effects and he didn't like them. And Clark's like, well, my friend got exposed and she has headaches. He's like, well, she's probably going to die tomorrow. He's like, whoa, tomorrow? Die? What are you talking about? He's like, it's okay, though, because I concocted an antidote and I kept it in this refrigerator with me for the last few years, even though I'm homeless. So good on him, man. Way to be a good soldier.
Yeah, but my favorite part is the part that you haven't said yet, which is you have to give her the entire dose in this giant needle directly to her heart.
This thing is, it's literally a foot long. Like, right?
It's a ridiculous needle, and it's a ridiculous thing that he has to do, and you should not inject things directly into people's hearts. That's what I'm saying. Especially if you are not a medical professional.
Well, I mean, you know, you gotta do what the man says. So.
But why is that always the thing? Every single show, it's like, you need this shot directly to your heart.
You know how hard it is to find a vein?
I know, and that's the thing. It's like
the heart is the ultimate vein, Trisha.
Heart is the ultimate vein.
Oh man! So Chloe's driving to the can, still in her dad's car for some reason. Like I said, I'm going with the Volkswagen is the one its product placement destroyed. It's, like they gave him one car, right? They're like, you get this one Beetle, and if you destroy it, that's on you. So they keep one. They wanted to save it. I don't know. She starts getting tailed by Miss Taylor's son, William was his name. And he starts trying to run her off the road. And it's the bridge. They call it a different bridge. I don't know what name they use in the episode, but it was Loeb Bridge, named after Jeff Loeb, where Lex hit Clark. Let's be real, guys. This is the same bridge in Canada, okay?
They only have one bridge in Canada.
Like, even the camera angles are exactly the same. It's like
just this bridge.
Try to hide it a little better, right? But Clark calls Chloe on because this is an episode where Clark has a cell phone because the plot needs it. Other episodes he doesn't have one. But anyway,
please say that about 10 times fast. Clark calls Chloe.
Clark calls Chloe. Clark calls. I can't stop. So, so he calls her and he kind of. I guess that's how he figures out where she is and stuff. But he super speeds over there right when William's gonna knock Chloe off into the river or something. If she might have headaches from this because she's gonna from her truth serum, but she's gonna have some serious headaches from all the whiplash from getting rear-ended about 5 times from this guy. But he shows up at the last second. We see Chloe kind of pass out from the whiplash. We also see Clark give William whiplash, so that's 2 knockouts to keep Clark's secret. Say that 10 times fast, right? But that's +2 for our tally board. We'll tally it up at the end. 2 more. So everybody's passed out, so Clark can do a superhero thing, and then he rips open her shirt.
Yes.
And gives her this epic syringe directly into the heart.
This and, okay, I have another thing. So first of all, way to ruin a shirt.
He does. It's Superman. That's all he does is rip open shirts.
He has a thing against buttons. Stabbing it directly into her heart, the way that he, like, with his super strength, winds up for that and slams it into her chest, like, she would have died. His fist just ends up in the pavement underneath her somehow, and she's dead.
Well, I gotta say this. My best friend Lance Lester will never let me let it down if I don't mention this when we talk about this.
All right.
There was a meme back in the day of Clark ripping open her shirt, and it said, "That rack is all Mac," for Allison Mack.
Oh, right? That's awful. I
know, I know.
I hate it so much.
So that's what it was, because they didn't sexualize Chloe the way they did Lana and Lois and everybody else.
They did not, except in certain situations when they definitely did.
Like this one where he rips open her shirt. So there it is.
Like this one, and also in Rush.
Oh, yes, very much so. And I guess in Devoted? The one with the Gatorade? But she was kind of like more in the cheerleader outfit then, so it was more for comedy.
Yeah, it's
but, more for comedy. Anyway... There you have it. Yes. As she says later, she pulp fictions him, or yes. He pulp fictions her back to life. And she's fine. And okay, and here's the deal, all right? That dude is in that car, right? That William, right? And then later on, I think one of them asks the other one, like, hey, you hear what happened to William? And he's like, yeah, I guess with his mom's arrest, it was just too much. I'm like, what happened to him? They don't tell us. Like, did he get
died?
I know, right? I don't know. Like, it was kind of dark. I don't know what happened to him.
I'm assuming he is also in the asylum.
And yeah, with everybody else. Yeah.
In the DC universe, people only ever go to asylums.
To Belle Reve.
And
Belle
never
Rev.
To prison. Like
There's Blackgate Prison. The Penguin occasionally ends up in Blackgate Prison. But other than that, everyone goes to Arkham Asylum
everyone
or Belle Reve.
Arkham Asylum or Belle Reve.
Or the pipeline in The Flash, right?
How did they go into the bathroom? That's all I want to know is how they go to the bathroom.
I mean, do they let him out? They bring him food.
What's terrible is I interviewed the showrunner of The Flash a couple of months ago and did not ask that question. And I'm going to regret myself.
You're going to regret yourself that the rest of your life. I give The Flash a lot of credit in season one anyway, where they're like, this is immoral. This is against, like, the law. Like, these people have not gone through due process, and they made a big deal about it, right? And I'm like, okay, cool, I'm glad they addressed that. And then they just ignore it and keep criminals down there again, so I don't know.
Well, they did, like, do a whole plot line where they help the police, like, make metahuman...
Right, the metahuman prison? Iron Heights wing or something, yeah.
Metahumans to prison. And they even do a whole thing where, like, they give it to Supergirl. So, like, they can lock metahumans up in prison on Supergirl. But, like, yeah. And they're also, like, maybe poke a hole for some oxygen.
I'm sure it's very advanced technology down there. Anyway, you're right. So I get another Lex and Lionel scene. The scene starts with Lionel saying, that's it, no need to call back. And you think it's just some, like, you know, ending of a scene, like ending a conversation to have the illusion of he was doing stuff before, like, showed up. Oh, no, it comes back at the end. But anyway, you don't know that yet, so that makes it so good. So they have some more back and forth. And Lionel, like, I like how they're, like, starting to get mad at each other. He's like, I'm running out of patience with you, damn it. What do you want from me?
I and just want to be loved.
I know, right? He doesn't tell him, I just want you to love me. He says, it doesn't matter, Dad. I'm never going to get it anyway. And he storms off. And that's so sad, right?
It's very sad. I'm very sad for Lex.
Because they're so just, they're as you said, they're like at height adversarial levels right now, the two of them.
Yeah.
And it's tough because Lionel, it's true. Like he's never, I don't know. He loves Lex in his own way, but it's a really warped way. So
I don't know how much he loves Lex.
Well, he loves him in as so much as he's his only son, right? And he's his heir. That's pretty much like he has these megalomaniac ideas from like Alexander the Great and Julius Caesar and all that, and he applies those to like his bloodline. He thinks the Luthers are royalty, and in that respect, he loves Lex and what he represents more than so Lex as a person.
Yeah, like I would argue that I'm not sure how much he loves Lex, and I don't know how much. He's capable of loving anyone. I feel like he's more of the kind to like people for their usefulness or to randomly become obsessed with Martha Kent. but beyond that, I'm not so sure if he's capable of loving anyone.
But himself
and his money. Mm-hmm. And his power.
So we have a loft scene that is not Lana and Clark for once. It's Chloe and Clark.
Oh my God.
And this is a great scene of reconciliation between the two of them, I think. And you know, we've kind of gone down this road a couple times in the four with her going too far and Clark forgiving her. But now they do establish, again, as I said, they reshot the scene. I wonder what the original scene would have been. It's not on the DVD. It's a deleted scene. Thanks, guys. But anyway, that would have been nice. But alternate scene, just let us see it. So I like this because I don't know. There's something about just Clark and Chloe's friendship. It just feels real. It's like real people talking. Like, and it just this is a great. That, I mean, again, I was a Clark shipper at the day, CHLARK. So whenever we got these Clark and Chloe moments, I was all about it, and I love this scene.
I was too.
But this teases like the dark future that this show often did with Chloe. She's like, I'm just worried that one day I'm going to push too far, and I'm never going to have a chance to say I'm sorry, right? And I'm like, that's what's going to happen, right? She's going to die, and he's going to go into journalism to, like, you know, in her memory or something, right? So there was that for a while. And then it was, oh, she's going to go crazy like her mom. And that so there was that for a while, right? Mm-hmm. And then it was, oh, she has these superpowers, right? And she's going to sacrifice her healing ability to save Clark's life.
Which
and that
she
was gonna
did,
happen.
Not for Clark, but she did for Lois.
Yeah, she did for Lois, yeah.
Spoilers.
And then it was like, oh, here's Doomsday, and that's, you know. So anyway, all these things, right? Yeah, like year after year, I lived in fear for so many seasons that they were going to kill her off and make her some tragic, like, you know, basically like fridging her in some form, right? And I'm so glad they didn't, right?
Yes.
So.
I am too. Anyway. They definitely do, like, they teased a very dark future for Chloe, and she does fall into it eventually, and. You know, we can talk about that in like 6 years when you get to the last couple seasons. But, you know, they do some really great stuff with her sort of dark side to her, because I do think that Chloe has a dark side to her in ways that Lois does not, in ways that Clark certainly does not.
Lana has a darker side than Chloe, though.
Oh, God. Lana's dark side is horrific. And again, we'll talk about that when we get there. But it's all about the different ways that they react to Clark's abilities or the different ways that they react to power. And I have thoughts about sort of in the same way that I enjoy the difference between the way that Chloe reacts to learning about Clark or to not knowing about Clark and the way Lex reacts to not knowing Clark's secret. And the way that Lana reacts to being in a relationship with Clark versus the way that Lois reacts to being in a relationship with Clark and sort of like them being on equal footing or not are very similar, like my feelings on those. So there you go.
I mean, yeah, you talk about season five, there's just the dynamic shift between, you know, it starts out Clark and Lana are here, but then she goes over to Lex. And then you have like Clark and Chloe on one side and Lex and Lana on the other. And they're kind of like this mirror of each other, like the four main characters there. So. I love that kind of progression in season five. So, but we'll talk about that in a couple.
There's
years, right?
There's season seven. Yeah, there's season seven stuff too that is very similar to that I really like as a conversation, if not so much actually enjoying the character because she's
there. It is there. It is right because like Lexana, right? If you call it Lex and Lana, hate it. Yeah. But interesting to discuss. So
yes, interesting to discuss. All of season six is interesting. But yeah, so this scene is great, and then of course we end with the other
Clark
side
and Lana.
Yeah.
Oh no, we gotta have our Clark and Lana scene though. I know you wanted to skip ahead.
Oh God, because... I have to go. Fine, Clark and Lana. Clark finds out that Lana's going to Paris.
That's right. And hey, for the Lana fans out there, there is a nice, you know, back and forth here. He tells her all about Paris, and he's kind of surprised. But at the end of it, he says, "Why didn't you tell me sooner?" And she says, because I didn't want anyone to talk me out of it. And the truth is, I knew you were the only person that could. I'm like, oh.
Yes.
So, something for everybody this episode, right?
I
Pete's
guess.
Getting some love. Lana, Clark shippers. Chloe and Clark getting some scenes. It's good stuff. Lex, the only one not getting any love. So, poor old Lex. But then.
He doesn't get any love. Lex doesn't deserve love. I love Lex.
But then, we get our final scene at the Talon.
Yes.
Oh, damn it, I did it again.
You did. It's the torch,
it's
not
the
Talon.
Torch, damn it. We this is really cool. I had to look it up. There's this really cool music under it, and it's Paul Schwartz arrangement of a song called Stabat Mater, and it's like this techno kind of Renaissance opera song. I don't know. It's really cool, but it's playing under all this, and we get
techno
Chloe.
Opera Renaissance.
Yeah, that's the best way I can describe it, right? But Chloe's logging into her voicemail, right? She's typing in her code.
Now,
right?
Children, back in the day, you had to dial in to your voicemail, type in a code, which you had to remember, and then your voicemail would play for you.
Wow, that is true. I bet a lot of people that are like, what is she doing? Like, we had better security back in 2003, didn't we, Trisha? So.
We did.
But guess what? The voicemail's not there.
No.
It's a message from Lionel Luther, and it's epic, because he's like, oh, Miss Holden, just me. That message, it's not here. So it's gone. That's it. No need to call back. And it's like, what? That is what we heard him mentioning in the last scene we saw him in, and now it's here at the end. So cool. Right? What a cool ending.
All the show.
And I'm sure they thought, and I mentioned this many times, and there's back-to-back scenes like this, like, the episode, it's like every script of Smallville had two possible last scenes. Mm-hmm. It's like the cool X-Files kind of ending like this, or the CW, WB ending, like Clark and Lana. And, like, they would, like, alternate, I think. Like, you know, they would just, what did we do last week? Okay, let's do the opposite. Or let's do, you know, whatever. So that's, I found that interesting watching through the show. You can identify, like, oh, this could have very easily been, like, the last scene of the episode. Yeah. Or vice versa. So, but what a cool way to end it, right?
Yeah, it is, especially because it foreshadows sort of the rest of the season. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Chloe. How you feeling?
A little shaky, but I'm totally truth serum free. Whatever you put fiction into my chest not only kickstarted my heart, but also relieved me of any levitas in my system, so that's good. Did you hear what happened to William?
Yeah. Between his mother's past and her arrest, he took quite a hit.
I never meant to hurt him.
His mom's the one who should have told him. So. That's the thing about the truth. It's bound to come out sooner or later.
And I guess it's my turn to come clean. When you found me on the bridge, I was on my way here. I was gonna ask your parents all the questions you would never answer. Look, I know I'm sorry has become a recurring motif in our relationship, but...
No, Chloe, look, I appreciate your honesty, but you weren't yourself.
I really wish I could believe that. But there have been so many times when my curiosity's gotten the best of me. Maybe this is just who I am.
No, you're going after the truth. Chloe, there's nothing wrong with that.
Unless it hurts the people you care the most about. I'm just afraid that one day I'm going to push too hard and I'm not going to get the chance to say I'm sorry.
Today's not that day.
Truth got a 8.7 out of 10 on IMDb, and the Superman homepage gave it a 4 out of 5. So, Trisha, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, we give episodes here on Always Hold On to Smallville, what would you give Truth?
On the letter grade scale, I guess I would give it a B.
Okay.
I like this episode a lot.
I think I'd give it a B plus because I did. It's very enjoyable.
Yes.
Right. But as you pointed out, it sets up a lot of cool stuff, and they only follow up on about half of it. And then also, it is pretty ridiculous. Just the, oh, she had to be in this room with a thing that sprayed her, and then there was a guy who had a syringe in a refrigerator, you know, that saved her. So there's a lot of, like, you just have to go with it. But the episode is so enjoyable, you do go with it, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'll give it a B plus. So B for you and a B plus for me. So pretty fair grades. So last order of business here, we have our tally board.
Okay.
We have a plus one for blue shirt, red jacket. So we're at 14 instances of that now, 14 episodes of that so far. We have a plus one for episode title set in episode. That brings us to 22 episode titles set in episode so far. We have a plus one for hospital visit because Chloe, of course, ended up at the hospital with her headaches. We have 44 hospital visits so far. 62 episodes, 44 hospital visits. That's a pretty big ratio.
I'm surprised it's not once an episode.
I know. It's going to balance. I think it might overtake the episodes at some point. We'll see. We have a knockout to keep Clark's secret. We have two of those. We have Miss Taylor's son and Chloe at the end of the episode, so that brings us to 19. And then we finally have an under the influence plus one. Chloe was under the influence of these spores, the truth spores. That brings us to 22. And final order of business, the Bechdel test. I'm happy to say this episode passes because we have multiple instances of two female characters talking to each other, not about a guy. So I love it.
It's amazing, and considering there are really only two female characters.
well, you know, Martha, you got the teacher, you know, so there were a lot more opportunities in this episode for it to pass.
Yeah, it does. It does work. Technically, the Martha scene does
it's
not
about pass. Jonathan. Yeah, it's I know. But we had the amazing, we had a Chloe and Lana scene. They didn't mention Clark at all. Amazing.
Right? I think that should get it more points. Is because
that should be a plus two.
Not talking about Clark at all.
Oh, man. I know, right? That's got to be the only scene the two of them are together in the whole show where they don't talk
ever.
About Clark. But I'll keep an eye out for that for real.
Except that one where they're witches next season.
Yeah, but they're not themselves. So that doesn't count. Ah, I gotcha. So, Trisha, hey, it's been a lot of fun
sitting
down and talking to you about an episode of Smallville. Again, if people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Trisha Ennis. That's TRICIAENNIS. I am hilarious, so totally go give me a follow. And you can also read all my writing over at Sci-Fi Fangirls. Just go to sci-fi.com and click on the little Fangirls link on top, and you can see all the cool stuff we write about.
Yeah, you guys have some great stuff over there. I especially love your kind of thoughts on watching like Superman 4 or Supergirl. You know, for all the Superman fans out there, definitely check out their thoughts on watching through those.
Those are hilarious. I've written some great ones. Check out the one about Spice Girls.
All right. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. You can find me on another podcast I do, Standard Orbit, on the Trek FM network. We talk about all things old and new, Captain Kirk and the Enterprise. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. And as for the podcast, you can find us at Always Smallville with one S on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. Once again, with one S. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. Trisha, thank you again so much for being on. It was a lot of fun talking to you about truth. That's the truth. So.
It is the truth.
And I'm really looking forward to delving into Smallville with you in the future. Sounds like you got some really you got some hot takes on some future seasons. So.
So many hot takes. All of the hot takes on future seasons.
All right. Well, next week we're talking about Memoria. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.